Hello, it's Scott Manley here. A couple of months ago, I was back in my homeland of Scotland, visiting the family, doing a bit of tourism, and I went into the Museum of Transport. This is a museum that I have been visiting ever since I was a really, like probably a five-year-old, right? It's full of cars, buses, things from trains and ships. Now, there's not a lot of aviation or rocketry in there, although there is like a small CubeSat, but I saw something in here that I realized, oh my gosh, I have to talk about on this channel because it is inexorably linked to modern day rocketry on many levels. So this is a steam turbine, right? And this is over 120 years old. And you can see right the way, this is an incredibly intricate device. If you think about it, this thing had to spin really fast and had a whole lot of precision on these blades and the rotor and the stator. So yeah, it's the first operational maritime steam turbine. Now, there was a few ships built previously. The first was the Turbinia, which was a test system, which we'll talk about. It was the one that broke the records. Then the Royal Navy built the Viper and the Cobra, and they were faster than anything else, except they actually were destroyed and sunk in accidents unrelated to their turbines soon after being built. But the King Edward, it was the first commercial ship, and it was a ferry that would sail around the Firth of Clyde, or the Clyde estuary, just off the coast where I used to be. And it started out, yeah, in the early 20th century, and it did so for decades. It was faster than anything else at the time. It was more efficient than anything else at the time. It could beat the other competing ferries using reciprocating engines. And it used a whole lot less propellant, a lot less coal doing this. So anyway, this was, I think it was the Parsons Maritime Steam Turbine Company or whatever. And that's Charles Parsons, who was the son of William Parsons. And I've actually mentioned William Parsons before because he was the Earl at Castle Burr in Ireland. And there, they built the biggest telescope in the world for basically most of the 19th century. This was a 72-inch, 1.8-meter reflecting telescope. It was called the Leviathan. And using this, astronomers were able to see the first evidence of spiral structure in nebula, which we now, of course, know to be galaxies. So obviously, a family that highly valued science and engineering. And yes, Charles Parsons came from that. And he went off to Newcastle. And his sort of fascination was engines and specific and engineering. And he started out really being interested in building engines for electric generators. And he understood that faster rotation speeds actually made for more efficient dynamos and generators. And the problem was at the time, steam engines, which are sort of like reciprocating engines, because you've got bits going back and forth, that implicitly generates vibration. And he came up with this like cool four-cylinder opposed engine where all the cylinders spin around. And that was a cool idea, but it wasn't really his big achievement. The real big step forward was when he came up with the idea of the turbine, the steam turbine, where you could take high pressure steam and blow it down through multiple stages of blades, which would be pushed to rotate, and stators, which would be static, but remove the rotation from the steam. And by having multiple stages, they could gather huge amounts of energy and the turbine would rotate at very, very high speeds. And this was revolutionary. They managed to massively upgrade the amount of electrical power that they could produce by these things. And in a matter of a decade, they had cut the cost of electrical generation by a factor of four or something ridiculous. It was like the nearest thing we had to, Moore's Law at the time. Interestingly, by the way, is the first, it wasn't technically the first spinny thing that could be made with steam. That honor is owed to a device called the Heliopile, which is, it was a sort of Greek era thing. I think actually technically it was Alexandra in Egypt or whatever, described in the first century AD, but it probably predates that. What you had was a heater, which you would generate steam, it would have piping that would go into a vessel and a couple of little nozzles that would come out of it. And hot steam would spray out and it would spin around. And it couldn't generate any real work, but it could certainly impress people at the time. And they would be apparently set up in temples. But interesting side effect of that, if you think about it, those little bits ejecting steam and, you know, pushing the thing around using reaction force, those were technically rockets. So yeah, I know we talk about how China invented the first rockets and those were solid, you know, propellant, black powder things that would actually fly. Technically, I guess this predates that since it's a reaction engine, although it didn't fly or didn't do anything useful, and it certainly didn't, you know, strike fear into the enemies as the fire arrows and everything did. So anyway, Parsons revolutionized electricity generation with his steam turbine. They were more efficient than the reciprocating steam engines at the time, and they very quickly moved this over. We began to see ships that would actually include steam turbines on board to generate electrical power, but these would typically take power, like excess steam from the reciprocating engines, run it through the turbine, and that would generate the onboard ship power. But of course, it wasn't such a great leap to decide to put steam turbines in ships and start propelling them a lot around. And of course, you know, Parsons had this great idea and began to work on it, but around, I think it was 1889, there was a bit of a falling out with his company, and he actually lost access to the patents that would let him develop his turbine. So he had been developing axial flow turbines, that is, the steam flowed along the outside around the shaft. So he said, well, wait a second, if I don't have the patent for that, maybe we could do a radial flow design where you have like a flat disc with blades on it and you blow steam in the middle or on the outside and it gets squeezed down and causes the thing to spin. That's what he began working on for a few years while he didn't have patents. And they actually developed the first engine for his ship, the Turbinia, with these radial flow turbines, even though they weren't amazingly efficient. And as an aside, around about this time, there was also a guy in Sweden who was wanting to invent his own type of turbine, and he came up with the idea of a turbine that instead of relying on the pressure of the steam, you know, twisting things or pushing things around, that you could use the velocity of the steam. So he had these pipes that would eject steam onto a turbine disc at high speeds, and that would spin the turbine. And he invented a special nozzle that would take pressurized steam and accelerate it to higher than its speed of sound. So this guy basically invented the rocket nozzle. His name was Gustave de Laval, and yes, rockets use de Laval nozzles to get the, you know, their thrust. Now, of course, his particular turbine design didn't succeed commercially, but one interesting side effect of it was that the bearings had to be lubricated by oil, and they had problems with the water from the steam getting into the oil, and they needed to separate that out. So he built a little centrifugal separator where, you know, you're spinning things fast and the water comes out on the outside and the oil stays on the inside. He realized at some point after the turbine wasn't being a big seller that you could do this with milk and you could separate out the cream and the milk. And the De Laval company still makes milking machines and dairy stuff to this day. So I was wondering whether you could actually fuel a rocket on cream. Anyway, yes, coming back to the Turbinia. Yes, so they worked on this. They built an engine for this small ship, which was apparently like the first time he'd ever designed a ship as well. And the company he worked with, it was the first ship they'd ever built. But yeah, he built this little thing. Radial flow turbines, not that efficient. And it wasn't performing anywhere near as well as they would predicted. They'd got some funding from like the Royal Navy to show them how awesome turbines was. And it just simply wasn't performing. They actually built some of the first torsion gauges on the shaft so they could actually measure how much force was being transmitted. So these were like couplings that would have springs, and as they put more and more force in, they would adjust and they could record that. But yeah, they figured out that it was only putting about 960 horsepower out of this shaft, but that was still way more than they were actually getting from the screws in the water. Turned out that the turbine was so good, even in this half-assed radial version, that it was causing cavitation on those screws. And that was something that hadn't really been seen or certainly hadn't been understood. They built all sorts of test hardware to try to understand how to interface these props to the water. They built this cool, like, the hydrodynamic equivalent of a wind tunnel. And because it was running at smaller scale, they had to heat the water up to close to the boiling point so that you would actually get this cavitation. And then to get photographs of this, they had like a flash system that would trigger at exactly the same orientation of the props as they were spinning, or the screws as they were spinning through the water. Cavitation, is, for those that don't know, yeah, if you've never watched Hunt for Red October, you may have never heard cavitation, right? Basically, if your prop is pushing through the water, right, it generates high pressure on one side and low pressure on the other side. And if you push it too hard, the low pressure can get below the boiling point or the vapor pressure of the water. And so it starts to boil. It creates a cavity. And as that, so you're wasting energy at that point. But beyond that, you also end up with these bubbles that collapse. And as they collapse, they do so in an unstable manner. And the collapse actually damages the, you know, the surface of your screws, of your propellers. And obviously, if you were, say, trying to sneak around in a submarine, cavitating is really bad because it makes lots of noise. So anyway, they discovered it, or at least they certainly documented it best. They figured out some new propeller designs. And by about like 1895, they'd finally managed to sort out the patent. They tore out the old engines, put in new turbines that were axial flow. They were getting 2,000 horsepower out of it. They were pushing this thing at 34 knots. And there's this great story about how the Navy by that point had sort of lost interest and didn't expect much of it. But during a major review of the Navy, they sort of rolled up in their, they basically gate crashed the whole thing in their Turbinia, running rings around every other ship because nothing could possibly keep up with it, easily outclassing everything. And, you know, the Navy were like, great, we'll have some more of that. So yeah, they built the Viper, they built the Cobra. They would have been great if they didn't sink early in their career. But then, yeah, the King Edward, that's what this turbine is at the Glasgow Transport Museum. And what really gets me is this is, as I said, it's like 125 years old, this design. It's fabricated back then. We think about precision machinery these days, and this isn't that far removed from it. Certainly what it's lacking is material science that we have these days. So these days, steam turbines are definitely still a thing. They're obviously like used in almost every thermal power plant out there. But we also have gas turbines now. Gas turbines where instead of steam driving it, you've got a gas from a combustion product. Those are what are used in jet engines. And in fact, actually, power plants will use them as well. Yeah, Parsons was a fascinating, a high achiever. He invented a really cool thing, which was like an amplified gramophone, which used high pressure air, which was modulated by the needle. He would go on to purchase the Grubb Telescope Company. It became Grubb Parsons, yeah. And apparently his wife, who he had courted by demonstrating his skill with sewing, his wife and his daughter would go on to found the Society of Women Engineers. So a fascinating family. But yes, moving forward to today, steam turbines. Yes, they're in every power plant, but also they're in rockets, right? The V2, its turbo pump was powered by a steam turbine running off of decomposed peroxide. And that is still in the Soyuz rocket to this day. That's what they're using for their propulsion. So yes, this absolutely has a direct link to modern rocket science, as well as being an absolutely beautiful artifact from a bygone age. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.